Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make The Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Another great journalist that I know is Andrew Greif of The Oregonian, who covers Oregon football, among other things. He took a fascinating dive inside the Ducks football program. Kind of the stuff we were seeing manifest itself on the field. We all saw sloppy play, kids running around, the lack of talent. We wondered what was going on behind the scenes, right? Well, Andrew Greif laid it out today on Oregon Live, and you can check that out by going to Oregon Live and finding this fantastic piece of journalism, and Greif joins us now. Why did you take this dive? Why were you interested in this?
Well, thanks again, John, for also having me on. Very kind. I think that, you know, just the season was so remarkable for how it went off the rails so quickly that I just thought it deserved a look into why this happened. You know, and no one was really expecting this to go the way it did. Certainly not this poorly, where it's not only head coaching change, but everything's changing. I mean, they've replaced Jamie Radcliffe as the, you know, head football strength coach. They've taken away a lot of those most recognizable pieces of what made Oregon football football. And so if an administration is willing to do that, I think there's obviously concern about the way it had been. And so this was my attempt, at least, to try to answer, okay, well, you know, how did it get that bad? And, you know, what are they trying to do about it next?
Why not? Let me ask you this, because it's come up. Why not write about this, you know, in week four of the season? Why is it an easier story or a better story to write about after Mark Helfrich gets fired and the coaching staff changes over?
Well, I think that there's an element of, it's kind of like the bookend. You know, this is a closing of a chapter. That's the timing now is that you can kind of put the season at rest. During the season, there's still so much stuff that's fluid and going on that you can get kind of lost in the minutiae of it. This was trying to look at what we call, you know, the 30,000 foot view, and having the full perspective from season to end. And also, people are just more willing to talk when it's not, the season isn't going on. You know, there's more free time. That was definitely a factor, but it's a way of trying to, at the end, almost like an autopsy.
Talking to Andrew Greif of the Oregonian, his pieces on Oregon Live. You can read it now about the Oregon Ducks. I'm fascinated by this weight room thing. Tell us about the weight room problems that Helfrich was having.
Yeah, you know, that it was one of these many small things that went wrong for the Ducks. The way the players said it was that, you know, it started in the spring and got worse in the summer, that there was just kind of, players would show up and would, you know, sometimes they would actually do the workout to the letter. They would do everything, but they just would cut corners and do, you know, half the weight. You know, one guy was saying that he'd look around and see, and guys with, like, you know, 80 pounds on a bar, and he'd be like, I know you're stronger than that.
Yeah.
You know, or they would just, especially in the summertime, they just mark it down that they had finished stuff, but not really do it. And it's easier to do that during the summer because position coaches really can't watch you. They can observe up to a point, but they really can't. There's not a whole lot of contact during the summer months between position coaches and their players. And there's always going to be more football players working out, even when they come in small groups, than there are people observing, more coaches, you know. So it seems like when players would kind of bring that up and say, what are you doing? They would just get these blank stares back, like, well, what? Like, what are you going to do about it? And essentially, this was a big deal because a couple of years ago, you know, Marcus Mariota, he wasn't this rah-rah guy in too many cases as a leader, but he was really diligent about the weight room, apparently. Apparently, he and Hieronymus Gross, who were really trying to keep on guys because they knew at Oregon, you usually play at a disadvantage for strength because they usually like to recruit smaller, faster guys.
Steve Greatwood had a quote in your piece about broken windows. What did he mean by broken windows?
You know, his quote was about using the analogy of how a factory can, you know, even if it's shut down, like, it can stand for months or years untouched. But as soon as someone throws a rock through the window and, you know, people realize that you can do that and get away with it, all of a sudden all the windows get knocked out. And that was his take on again, the small things in practice during these stretching periods that began practice. You know, it's like it was like a, you ran back and forth about 20 yards. You skipped, you jogged. It was a way to loosen people up. And it took about 2 minutes, 2 or 3 minutes to really complete, player said. Well, guys weren't going the full distance they were supposed to. They were just slacking off, cutting reps. And, you know, usually coaches are standing at the 20-yard line watching guys, you know, touch that line. Other coaches just weren't. They're talking, not watching, and guys would slough off. So I think he realized that, you know, the culture that was underpinning this whole thing, Oregon talked on and on about how proud they were of the culture. When it not only was kind of being talked about, the boy, I think something's wrong here, but players were openly flouting authority. That's when it seemed like in some way the players were obviously showing that they didn't really care.
Andrew Greif of the Oregonian did a terrific job sort of encapsulating what happened, what went wrong, the perfect storm of Oregon football. And you're right, because we kept seeing the symptoms. We saw a team that didn't play discipline. We saw a team that wasn't physical. But we couldn't see into the weight room. We couldn't see into meetings where players were showing up late, according to your piece. We couldn't either see the police investigations that were going on. We see Tarodney Prevost is suspended, but we don't know the background, this code of conduct thing. How much did the players who got accused of violent acts, six players, I believe, between October and November, including allegations of sex assault, how much did that play a role in what happened with the program?
It was a really big factor. You know, it's one thing to be playing poorly on the field. You know, there's been a history that Oregon plays well, so they knew they could probably turn that around. The 2017 team on the field is probably going to be pretty good, I would think. But just when you combined it with how badly things were turning up from a PR standpoint off the field, it just seemed like it happened one after another after another. You know, remember that in the beginning of the story, I mentioned how Helfrich told guys after a particular loss in November, you know, don't do anything stupid tonight, basically. And within 9 hours, a guy got arrested for DUI. And that was, I think, the third in a string of incidents, like week after week, that kept happening. So I related that. One guy told me that, you know, the president at UGO, Michael Schill, he kind of has this phrase of excellence in everything. And I think that honestly, you know, the way that things were trending with the Oregon football, it just looked like that was not happening. The excellence wasn't happening. Or control guys, something wasn't breaking through.
We look at the loss of Mariota, and you lose a Heisman winner, you take a step back. But is it possible that Helfrich just didn't have that leadership gene, head coach gene, and he needed guys like Hronas Grasu and Mariota, and if he didn't have them, the program was going to unravel? Is that oversimplifying?
Well, I would say that I think that even Vince Lombardi probably needed his best players to be his best leaders, too. And that just wasn't happening in Oregon this year. You know, it helps when, again, two of your All-Americans are not only the guys who your players put your faith in on the field, but they're also basically taking the head coach's message from the meeting room into the locker room and really buffeting everything the coach is saying, basically parroting it and saying, we got to believe in this. You know, when those best players aren't necessarily your loudest players or like the guys who are the most vocal in leadership anymore, that's a problem. So I think although it would have hurt any coach, it seemed like it hurt Helfrich, especially from talking to players. They really thought that he was not this guy who, you know, he wasn't a soaring orator in terms of the way he led meetings. You know, he's very funny. He has very dry wit, but it doesn't come across well in larger settings. I think you can see that with how he dealt with the media a lot. He could seem uncomfortable, and players said that there was an element to that in the meeting room too, where kind of he wasn't able to really capture this motivation that players had. I think that if players already were kind of out on him, then, you know, a speech alone from him wasn't going to do it. So for all of people loved that offers, I think he was extremely well liked and well regarded. I know he is, but they just thought that maybe he wasn't well suited for this particular job.
The losses become easy to look at and say, okay, you know, maybe it was the Washington loss, maybe it was the USC loss, maybe it was the Stanford loss that really tipped things against him. But what was the biggest blow that he took outside of the football games, in your opinion?
You know, That's a good question. I asked people several times, people who would know, you know, what was the turning point for you? And it kept coming back. Mullen said there was no one moment, which, you know, he did say later that there was a point where he didn't see the trajectory improving. So he didn't elaborate, and I wish he had been a little more specific there. But people kept saying there was no epiphany. There was no moment where they thought, okay, this is it. It has to be done. This is what they say. But I think the Washington loss clearly was really bad because, you know, 70 points to your arch rival. It's to the coach, Chris Peterson, who many people thought should have had more of a chance for the job in 2013. But then you have a bye after it, and you basically have to, like, sit in that loss and just soak it in for, like, an extra week and take the criticism. I think that was a really big turning point where things went from, you know, kind of like garden variety frustration from the fan base to, you know what, they might have a point. You know, these guys are, this is like historic levels of losing.
I wondered with the Elijah Molden thing or the arrest after Helfrich had come out after the Washington game basically saying, hey, don't do anything stupid, and you got a player who went out and did something stupid, or, you know, all those things, when you add them up, you get the impression these guys either didn't respect him or didn't fear him.
I think it's the latter. I think it's definitely the latter. Over and over, players said that they disagree. If they disagreed with him on some elements, they still respect him. They thought he was extremely intelligent. Really liked him personally. Like, you know, he's a guy who would connect really well with guys one on one. If you're having trouble with your family or whatever, like he would make time to be there for you. But one player I talked with, who's quoted in the story anonymously, said, "Sometimes it's better to be feared than loved," and I think that was the case with him.
Willie Taggart comes in now, and, you know, he's a guy who never seemingly sleeps. He's out, you know, making changes to the program on a daily basis, bringing in new commitments and coaches. And how quickly can he close the gap?
When does Jake Browning graduate? Maybe that'll be the gap. It's tough to tell. You know, he has all these tools. He's walking into a great situation on offense, especially. Look at that offensive line. It's all back. Herbert's back. Royce Freeman's back. You know, I think that he's got a really ready-made system there. It's going to be up to Jim Leavitt, the defensive coordinator, who's getting paid a lot of money to improve this thing. It's going to be up to him to really find out how much improvement they can go. Because I think they have all the right pieces to get to a bowl game, or at least get to a bowl game next year. But they have to play complementary. You know, the offense can't score once on its opening drive in 12 games like they did this year. And then conversely, the defense can't allow, you know, 36 or 40 points a game like they have the last two seasons. So it's going to be like how it all unraveled, how you put it back together can take so many multiple factors. But the Pac-12 North is a beast, and you can't deny that. It's going to be really fascinating how they compete with Washington in that first go-around of Taggart and Peterson.
Did Willie Taggart do what you did? Did he go on a fact-finding mission asking players, hey, what went wrong? And, you know, if I'm the new guy, I kind of want to know what happened.
Yeah, he did that. When we talked with him, we sat down with him for about 45 minutes, Tyson Allager and I, my colleague, and this was in mid-December, week after he got hired or so, and he said that he asked players immediately, you know, what went wrong here? Because he's watching it from 3,000 miles away in Florida, and he thinks he might have some insight, but he really doesn't know, he said. So when he walked in, he wanted to talk to players about, tell me what the heck happened. And he said, when I raised the issue about the stretching period and the weight room, he said, yeah, I've heard about that. You know, he said he was learning the places that players should be and shouldn't be in Eugene. And I kind of jokingly said, you know, we'll watch out for Taylor's, the bar that had been, you know, at the heart of a couple incidents. And he said, oh, I know about Taylor's. So he definitely went on that kind of fact-finding mission like you're talking about.
Should the players ever be allowed in Taylor's? Like, if you were the coach, wouldn't you say, hey, you know, this, not during season, this is a bad place to show up on any night?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if he, you know, tried to keep that off limits. I think that it's just kind of a symbol right now for the players. They seem to get in trouble there, and it's not something like a new thing. I mean, there's lots of campus bars that, right, obviously the mix is going to be a problem, but that one in particular seems to get a lot of stuff that seems to happen around there.
Yeah, and, you know, I say that as a guy who has only been in Taylor's for a total of, like, 10 seconds. I just popped my head in once to be like, what is this about? And then I was like, oh, yes, every college in America has a place like this. You did a good job. What kind of response are you getting from this?
It's been, overwhelmingly positive. I heard back from several people I talked with for the story, and they thought it was all very fair. So that's kind of something I gauge a lot of. That's all I care about. So it's been really good. It's, you know, despite all the snow coverage on our website, I think it's the most read thing right now. So, hey, people love Duck football.
And I think, too, it's the right time for it because, you know, like you were saying, and I know the answer to it, but it's a question I'm getting. Like, why now? Why weren't you guys writing about this stuff mid-season? And part of the problem is, like, we saw all the symptoms. We were writing about symptoms mid-season. And part of the issue is to get people to talk on the record. You and I both had people telling us sort of off-the-record things that were troubling about the program. And it's kind of when I knew that he was in real trouble, when that locker room was fractured. It was fractured in a public way, where they were having team meetings and guys were talking about the young guys or the old guys. When you lose them publicly like that, you know internally it's much, much worse than we're all seeing on the outside.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that was really surprising in the moment to see just how open players were in October. You know, after the two-game losing streak, the Colorado loss was really bad because up to that point, people didn't realize what Colorado was, which was a really good team.
Right.
And so they, you know, Helfrich called it a train wreck, which was just so out of character for him to be that kind of, I don't know, that honest in a post-game interview setting to say something like that. And then you had the players come out and kind of sniping at one another. That was really strange. And so you're right. That was kind of like the symptomatic of the larger forces at work, which was that, you know, my sense is that there wasn't a whole lot of trust, you know, in the football room, in the football center during the fall. You know, players felt like sometimes their teammates didn't have their back, and sometimes they felt coaches didn't have their back, and vice versa. So it's hard to win in an atmosphere like that.
And I think when he, you know, that was, to me, was one of those moments where he wasn't real media savvy or marketing savvy. You don't ever, even if you think down deep it was a train wreck, you don't say that. You don't, as the head coach, you don't say that was a train wreck. You let other people say it, and you sit back and go, no, it wasn't.
Yeah. You know, he's usually pretty guarded in settings like that. And of course, that's a great quote for us to use. Like, wow, I can't believe he said that. But I don't think it helps. I don't think it helps morale. You know, even if it's honest,
yeah,
which I think it was, I don't think it helps morale.
I think in that night in the press box, I think as you were writing your game story, you turned to me and you said, I can't believe he said that. And I literally think you said that.
And I think we both looked at each other and said, by the way, I'm going to use that quote in my story. You might be doing it too, but I definitely am. It was too unusual.
All right, Greif, great job on that. For people who haven't read it, get on Oregon Live. Follow Andrew on Twitter. Make sure you read it. It reads like it's a 60-second read. I know it's much longer, but that's a mark of good writing and good journalism. Andrew, great job.
Hey, thank you very much.